parameters, the value of which we would like to know. Theta 2-3, the mixing angle which controls the atmospheric neutrino oscillations, and even on the sine of the delta time square atmospheric, which is related to the question of whether the spectrum of neutrino masses has normal hierarchy or inverted hierarchy. So let me begin with few introductory remarks. And you are all experts, so I will be rather brief on many things. First of all, let me say that 2002 was really exceptional, fantastic for the studies of neutrino mixing. I mean, we had the neutral current data from SNOW, which clearly indicates with very high confidence level that in the flux of solar neutrinos, which originally consists of electron neutrinos, when it arrives at Earth, there is a non-electron neutrino component. And this can be nu mu, nu tau, or anti-nu mu and anti-nu tau. Then we had the first data from the Kamland experiment. And this data actually presents first evidence for oscillations in an experiment which is done with terrestrial neutrinos, artificial neutrino source. This data also represents evidence for the existence of neutrino mixing in vacuum under the rather plausible assumption of CPT invariance. It singles out the LMA solution as the solution of the solar neutrino problem. One can speak about Kamland massacre. I mean, all these other solutions are, if not ruled out, they are now, after the Kamland data, it is clear they can only play a secondary role in the solar neutrino transitions or oscillation physics. And here I have in mind the small mixing angle MSW solution, the low MSW solution, the quasi-vacuum oscillation solution, the vacuum oscillation solution, the resonance spin flavor precession solution, the solution which is based on the hypothesis of existence of flavor-changing neutrino-neutral currents, in addition to flavor-conserving but flavor-non-symmetric such currents, and so on. So you see, this is a big progress, really.
Okay, Sergey, why do you say Kamland is the first terrestrial manner of KDK?
Sorry?
Why do you say Kamland is
the which else?
KDK.
K2K. But there, somehow, it is still statistically weak, I would say. It is weaker than Kamland. Indeed, I mean, in K2K, you have indications that neutrinos are, neutrinos are disappearing. However, statistically, this indication is much weaker than in the case of Kamland. So that's why I say that, yeah. Now, I would also say here that the future Kamland results, which we hope will be much more precise, will determine to a large extent the priorities in the future research in the field. Now, in 2002, SK became operational again. Mini Boon started. And finally, the achievements in our field and of course, the remarkable contributions made by Davis and Koshiba were honored by the Nobel Prize for Physics. So that is really. Now, let me just remind you very briefly the situation with the parameters for which we have a solution of the solar neutrino problem in terms of LMA transitions of solar neutrinos, and then the values of the parameters for which one have a description of the atmospheric neutrino data in terms of neutrino oscillations. I'm going to use that further in the talk. Now, this will be very briefly. So this is the results of one of the analyses which have been performed of the solar, Kamland, and Shaw data. This is a three neutrino oscillation analysis by Chobe and collaborators. And under the assumption that delta M squared atmospheric is much bigger than delta M squared solar, and in that case, the solar neutrino transition probability depends on three parameters, delta M squared solar, theta solar, and theta 1-3, the mixing angle which is limited by the show data. And what is shown here are the allowed regions for four values of this parameter theta 1-3. 0, sine squared theta 1-3, 0.02, this is 0.04 and 0.06. And the picture is the following. You have the LMA solution region. The best fit value is in the lower branch of the solution. It is at about 7 times 10 to the minus 5 eV squared, somewhere here. And tangent squared theta solar is around 0.4, 0.45. So you're somewhere here. I mean, this is the best fit value. There is a second minimum, which corresponds to a higher value of delta M squared at about 1.5 × 10⁻⁴. The tangent squared theta is more or less the same. However, this minimum is statistically less significant. So this is the preferred solution. As you see, when sine squared theta 1-3 increases, the importance of these two solutions also changes. And for relatively large values of sine squared theta 1-3 here, you see that the upper solution appears only at 3 sigma level, while the lower solution is very stable with respect to the change of theta 1-3. Now,
okay, what's the physics that's, you know, as theta 1-3 gets larger and larger, it's becoming less and less likely, right? So what's the physics that's controlling
it is basically Shaw.
Well, but Shaw limit is
it's in the same range.
Oh, there's no factor of 4.
Right.
That's what confused me.
It is basically Shaw. I mean, the Shaw data is included. Yeah.
No, but Shaw is not so good.
No,
it's
sine squared. It's just
a
sine squared.
It's
theta.
Not
2
theta. Sorry?
In delta M squared, it's not.
No, but you average. So independently of that, you do a 3 neutrino analysis of the Shaw data, and then you have a combined limit. You have to assume something about delta M squared atmospheric. So you assume that it is in the range of the solution of the atmospheric neutrino problem.
So, right. So the Shaw data would, for example, would exclude this right-hand plot at some confidence level.
Here?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And this is what we are seeing, actually.
Okay.
Now, to illustrate the progress, that has been achieved in the last year or so.
Sergey, before we go on, so there's a successor experiment plan.
There is a discussion, there is a very wide discussion of another reactor anti-neutrino experiment, but it has not been decided yet what kind of experiment one should do. So there are various possibilities. To have a detector placed very close to a very powerful power station reactor, so that to improve the limit on theta 1-3. But one can do more things, and perhaps you will need two detectors in order to reduce systematics in order to have substantial improvement on the sensitivity to theta 1-3. This is all being discussed. What is going to be decided is not clear yet.
Is it deciding what country or what planet this is?
Japanese are discussing that because they have this very powerful station, Kashiwazaki, where you have 25 gigawatt reactors. People in Europe are also discussing this possibility. It's still in the air. At the end, I think that it's very likely that one of these possibilities will be really realized, because it is much cheaper than all the other alternatives that have been proposed to limit or measure theta 1-3. So we will see.
I mean, there are a number of people people in the US and also the Russians.
Yeah, I should, I mean, what I said was not exhaustive, of course. There are groups in the US who are interested in that. Bob Svoboda, for example, from the SuperK collaboration is thinking about that. Michael Shavitz. In Russia, there is a proposal of to perform such an experiment at the Krasnoyarsk power station. So, okay, we will see.
And what's controlling whether that experiment will be a good one is what kind of systematic errors people can get. And as to what result you get depends very sensitively on the systematic errors. And some people like to talk about systematic errors of less than 1%. And other people say, well, 2% is pretty hard. So obviously, reality is somewhere between those two.
Now, this plot illustrates the progress we have made. I mean, this was a similar situation 2 years ago, about 3 years ago. So you had the LMA, the small mixing angle solution, the low, the quasi-vacuum region, the vacuum region, and then there is even just-so second type, just-so solution. And you had even also solutions with transitions into sterile neutrinos. All this is gone. I mean, you are now here. And sterile neutrinos can play a role, but not significant, really. They're quite limited. Okay, atmospheric neutrino results. I mean, similar. You know this plot. This is the result of the analysis of the atmospheric neutrino data, which favors dominant nu tau oscillation solution. Delta m squared here is in the range of 2.53 times 10 to the minus 3 v squared. So it's roughly by a factor of 10 at least bigger than the atmospheric delta, than the solar delta m squared, the delta m squared that drives the solar neutrino oscillations. And we will use this hierarchy in further in the talk. The mixing angle has to be large. Actually, the best fit value is for sine squared 2 theta equal to 1. Now, there are two things to notice here. The atmospheric neutrino data, the existing data, does not allow you to determine the sign of the delta m squared, which drives the oscillations, because these are basically vacuum oscillations. Now, that means that when you go to a three neutrino mixing, there are two possibilities. Positive sign would correspond to a kind of to a normal ordering of the masses of the three neutrinos, one smaller than M2, smaller than M3. I forgot to say that the solar neutrino data, once you fix the sign of delta M squared atmospheric, delta M squared solar, it tells you that the mixing angle is not bigger than pi over 4. So you are not in the dark side. Dark side is disfavored by the data.
What is the dark side?
A solution with theta solar bigger than pi over 4. On that, okay.
So it must be weakly disfavored because the evidence for any matter effects is tiny, and the only difference between the light side and the dark side is a matter effect.
Not so.
No.
The survival probability for solar neutrinos is about a third, the electron, whereas the survival probability in CAM land is like 0.7. So obviously, matter effects are very large for solar neutrinos. So that can distinguish between the so-called dark and the light side very well.
But I thought CAMLAN was because they don't average over delta M squared. They're actually
if you look averaging over, you can see it's
around. So this is the region of tangent squared. This is the line of tangent squared theta equal to 1, and you see that the solution is to the left. There is no, there is no piece of the solution which goes over. I mean, it is cut here.
Well, these are matter effects in the sun.
But no, that's correct. Does nothing to do with CAM.
Not near it. It's in the sun.
No, but I was using the CAM lens to show that there are big matter effects in the sun because those two do not agree. The sun probabilities are quite different.
Actually, the snow data pushed it quite away from the tangent squared theta equal to 1 line. Anyway, it's not relevant for what I'm going to discuss next, but it is relevant for the knowledge of the parameters we are dealing with. So in the case of atmospheric neutrinos, as I said, the sign is not fixed by the data of delta m squared. which results when you go to three neutrino mixing to two possibilities. You have normal ordering of the masses, M1 smaller than M2, smaller than M3, which corresponds to delta M squared positive, and this corresponds to the so-called normal hierarchy spectrum, mass, neutrino mass spectrum with normal hierarchy. And then you can have M3 smaller, as a smallest value, and then this usually is referred to in the literature as the case of neutrino mass spectrum with inverted hierarchy. Moreover, the atmospheric neutrino data also do not fix the sign of cos to theta atmospheric if sine squared 2 theta is different from 1. Since the oscillations are in vacuum, both signs of cos to theta are possible. So you can have theta atmospheric bigger than pi over 4 or smaller than pi over 4. So there are these two ambiguities. For example, if sine squared 2 theta atmospheric is 0.92, sine squared theta can be either 0.64 or 0.36. Both give you the same value of sine squared 2 theta. So there are these two ambiguities related to the interpretation of the atmospheric neutrino data.
Can I ask a really elementary and dumb question?
That's very dangerous.
No. I just, this is just a thing. Why do the experts plot these things always in some different variable? Like always, sometimes it's cosine 2 theta, sometimes sine square theta, sometimes sine of 2 theta, sometimes tan square theta. I always have to convert in my head.
In this way, they show. In this way, they show their individuality.
So, but is there some reason or some physics reason? I mean, can I understand this?
You know, for some time, the possibility of having a solution, for example, of the solar neutrino problem, with theta solar greater than pi over 4, was there, and then it made sense to plot the results, not in terms of sine squared 2 theta, where you lose this information, but either in terms of sine squared theta or tangent squared theta. So some of the plots you see are done with tangent squared theta. It is because of this reason. Now, for atmospheric, for the time being, it doesn't have much meaning because, okay, of the situation.
So,
right. Okay, the tangent squared theta plot has more information. It tells you that theta, for theta solar, cannot be bigger than pi over 4. Actually, you are restricted in the range between 0 and pi over 4.
I see.
So, now, of course, very important, as you know, is the result of the Shaw experiment, which I already mentioned in this for our picture of today of neutrino oscillations. The Shaw data tells us that electron neutrinos do not oscillate with values of delta m squared, which drives the atmospheric neutrino oscillations. And correspondingly, there is a limit on the parameter which characterizes these oscillations. And this is rather stringent. In the region of delta m squared atmospheric, for which you have a solution of the atmospheric neutrino problem, you see the limit on sine squared 2 theta is in the range of 0.1. So 0.1, a little bit more maybe, but this is the type of limit you get from the Shaw data. And of course, one has to take that into account in the analysis. Finally, we have an evidence for oscillations from the Kamland from the LSND experiment. This is just, I'm discussing this for completeness. I'm not going to use that further in the talk. Just let me remind you that there was a very nice combined analysis of the LSND data and the data of the Karman experiment, which doesn't see the effect the LSND sees. One should say that Karman does the experiment under somewhat less favorable conditions than LSND. And what remains from the allowed region is, in delta m squared, is a region between 0.16 and about 1 eV squared. And then you have this island at about 6 eV squared. And sine squared theta typically is small. Now, we have the Miniboon experiment running. And we hope that Miniboon will answer the question about in a definite way, the question about whether the effect that LSNDC is due to oscillations or due to something else.
Now, when you talk about the two kinds of hierarchy, it's known that M2 is bigger than M1, so the only issue is whether M3 is bigger or smaller.
You can always choose it to be.
Oh, why is that?
Now we are going into the conventions that one can use to describe the data. You can always number the neutrinos with definite mass in the way you want. So, for example, if you work with the convention, you can always work with this convention, N1 smaller than M2, smaller than M3. Okay? Then normal and inverted hierarchy correspond to different choices of the neutrino mass square differences, which describe solar neutrino oscillations. You can choose delta M squared atmospheric to be delta M squared 3-1. Why? For the solar, you have two possibilities. Delta M squared solar can either be delta M squared 2-1, and this corresponds to the case of normal hierarchy, or delta M squared 3-2, and this corresponds to the case of the inverted hierarchy.
If you draw the two possible spectra, it's clear, it's only two ways you can draw the spectra.
Big
gap
below
the
two guys close by. Right. And the two where they're close together, the dominant electron component is in the lower one, and we know that.
That we know.
From the angle.
From the solar angle. It's less than 45 degrees.
Right.
We can discard the dark side, and we can discard the inverse, inverting those two.
However, let me say, because you asked the question, let me be complete here. You have to make sure now that, for example, how should I put it? The angles in the mixing matrix, which correspond to solar neutrino, atmospheric neutrino oscillations, in the two cases are different. And you have to take care of that. It is simpler to work with the other convention, which I'm going to use, where you just interchange the place of this.
Right.
In that case, you don't have to worry about the angles. They stay the same. Just the sign of delta M squared 3-1 changes. Okay?
Or you can keep the angle the same and change the bottoms in the
middle. Right. Yeah. Okay. Now, few words about the three neutrino mixing. So if you want to describe simultaneously atmospheric and solar neutrino oscillation, you have to go to three neutrino mixing. Let me remind you that the number of parameters in the mixing matrix depends on whether the massive neutrinos are Dirac or Majorana particles. The mixing angles, the number of mixing angles is three, and of course it doesn't depend on whether on the type of the nature of massive neutrinos. However, if the massive neutrinos are Dirac particles, you have just one CP violating phase. If there are Majorana, you have three CP violating phases. One of them is the Dirac phase, and there are two additional phases which are usually referred to as Majorana phases. And these phases can play a role, for example, in neutrinoless double beta decay. Now, if I use the standard parametrization of this matrix, which I call Pontecorvo, Maki, Nakagawa, and Sakata, PMNS matrix, then, these are the standard notations. C12, C13, C23 are the cosines of the three angles, theta12, theta23, theta13. S12, S23, S13 are the signs of these angles. The phase delta is hidden in the UE3 element. You see it here, 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 and here. While the phases which are common for the second and the third column are the Majorana phases. the physical Majorana phases, which can be source of CP violation in the lepton sector. These are just remarks about these phases. Actually, it is funny that in the case of massive Majorana neutrinos, you can have CP violation even if the mixing is between two neutrinos, which is not the case of massive Dirac neutrinos. So there is sort of more possibility for CP violation in the case of massive Majorana neutrinos. The effects due to these phases are very subtle. These are all side remarks, part of the other talk. But I'm in love with these Majorana phases, so I have to say it. So the effects are subtle. You can have them, they can affect the prediction for the neutrino-less double beta decay rate. And funny enough, in the supersymmetric versions of the CSOR model of neutrino mass generation, well, with the so-called universal boundary conditions for the masses at the unification scale, in those models, you have lepton flavor violating decays, which can proceed with probabilities which are close to the existing upper limits. So it turns out that the branching ratios for these decays depend on the Majorana phases. So they appear also in some other observables in this class of models, of course.
What about the 3D, does that appear also?
Right. Yeah. So how does the mixing matrix look like if we forget about the phases? I mean, here we have square root, I mean, the solar mixing angle can be identified as theta 1, 2, the atmospheric theta 2, 3, and the Shaw is theta 1, 3. The solar is about pi over 6, atmospheric is maximal, and Shaw is small. So here we have square root of 3 divided by 2, here we have 1 half, small element, here we have two large elements, and you see that it's very different from the quark mixing matrix. Now, so in terms of parameters that we have in the case of three neutrino mixing, they are the three mixing angles, one CP violating phase if the massive neutrinos are Dirac particles, or three CP violating phases if they are Majorana, and the three masses. If we express two of the three masses in terms of the lightest mass, and the two delta m squared, which are extracted from the solar and atmospheric neutrino data, then in addition to the three mass parameters, we have to add the discrete parameter, which tells us whether the spectrum is normal or with inverted hierarchy. That is, we have to add the sign of delta m squared atmospheric. Now, problems that we will have to face, we would like to see solved in the future. There is a list that, the order is arbitrary. Of course, first of all, we would like to measure with rather high precision the parameters which drive the solar and atmospheric neutrino oscillations. Second, we would like to measure or improve, at least by a factor of 10, the sensitivity of the existing limits on theta 1, 3, on sine squared theta 1, 3. Now, let me remind you that sine squared, the theta 1, 3, this angle is very important because it controls the CP violation effects in neutrino oscillations. So the magnitude of sine squared, of sine theta 1, 3, determines to a large extent the magnitude of CP violation effects. So to have a chance to see these effects in neutrino oscillation, sine theta 1, 3 has to be large. Then, of course, we would like to determine the type of the neutrino mass spectrum, whether it is normal hierarchical, inverted hierarchical, and there is a third possibility of quasi-degenerate spectrum, when the absolute values of the three masses are much bigger than the splitting between them. So all these three possibilities are viable today. We want to know which of the three is realized, actually.
Do you get in trouble with cosmology in this last possibility if you make the masses very big?
You cannot make them bigger than, say, 0.5, 1 EV.
Oh, okay.
1 EV is, you are on the borderline.
There is a solution which I make all of them very big, but the one splitting is much smaller than the other.
They can be of the order of 0.5 EV, all of them.
Right, so all three of them are degenerate, but two of them are much, much closer than the third.
Right.
And that's okay with everything else.
Right.
What is this called, QD?
Quasi-degenerate, yeah. We would like, of course, to have a constraint or to know the value of the absolute neutrino mass scale. Mm-hmm. Oscillation experiments give you delta m squared, difference of squares of masses. They don't tell you anything about this scale. So, in other words, we want to have information on the lightest neutrino mass. Further, it will be of fundamental importance to determine the nature of massive neutrinos, Dirac or Majorana. Establish whether CP symmetry is violated in the lepton sector due to the Dirac phase or due to the Majorana phases if the massive neutrinos are Majorana particles. And of course, we have to find a theory which makes sense of all this. Solving these problems will keep us busy for quite a long time, I'm afraid.
Why do you say that?
I think it will take 10 years. Not less, probably.
Experimentally?
Yeah.
But theoretically?
Theoretically, it can come even tomorrow.
Yeah, the string theory.
Right. So once they pick the right vacuum, they will be done. Okay. Now, so what I'm going to discuss next is that actually further studies of the atmospheric neutrino oscillations by Super K or other water Cherenkov detectors can produce information on sine squared theta 1-3, sine squared 2 theta 2-3. This question about the sine of the cosine of 2 theta 2-3, if sine squared 2 theta 2-3 is different from 1. And then perhaps also information on the type of the neutrino mass spectrum, that is, of the sine of delta m squared 3-1. I mean, it goes like that. If they see an effect, then you can make conclusions about these quantities. If they don't see an effect, I would expect that the limits will be weak. But they have a chance of seeing an effect, of course. So, two words about atmospheric neutrino oscillations. First of all, in general, atmospheric neutrinos. Again, I'm going to use some of this in the further discussion. Now, as you know, they're produced in the upper part of the atmosphere at about 20 kilometers by the interaction of cosmic ray protons and light nuclei with the nuclei of the atmosphere, and which produce pions. And the neutrinos then originate from pion decay and from the muon decay, which comes from the pion decay. So this gives the main contribution to the flux of atmospheric nu mu and nu e neutrinos. And you see that if you count how many muon neutrinos you produce with respect to the electron neutrinos in this simple scheme, you get a ratio factor of 2. It just comes from the number of neutrinos that are produced of nu mu and nu e type that are produced in this sequence of decays. Obviously, this argument is valid as long as the muons are not energetically enough. Because if they're energetically enough, then they do not have time to decay before they reach the Earth, and then reaching the Earth, they will be absorbed. So you expect that this ratio, since the electron neutrinos are produced only in the muon decay, you expect this ratio of muon to electron neutrinos to grow with the energy. So it will be 2 up to a certain value of the energy, then grow. Now, here are the predictions for the ratio. And indeed, you see that up to roughly 2 GV. I mean, it stays constant, it is very close to 2. And then it begins to grow. And at 10 GV, it can be more than 3, 3.5, something like that. Now, let me remind you that Super K has different types of sample of events, which they categorize in different ways. I will be basically interested in two samples of events, which I called sub-GV samples and multi-GV samples. The sub-GV sample of events corresponds roughly to events produced by neutrinos which have energy smaller than about 1.6, 1.7 GV and bigger than 0.1, 0.2 GV. So this is the interval of energies which determines you the sample of sub-GV events. In the case of multi-GV events, the interval is roughly between 2 and 10 GV. So these are the energies of neutrinos which produce this sample of events. Now, the geometry of, the path lengths for the atmospheric neutrinos which are detected in Super K. If they come from above, they typically travel 10, 20 kilometers, 30 at most. If they come from horizontally, from the side, the path length is about 500 kilometers. And if they come from below, for example, along the diameter of the Earth, the path length is twice the radius of the Earth, about 13,000. Kilometers. Now, for us also, for our discussion, it will be important that for the multi-GV neutrino, that is, for the neutrinos which give contribution to the multi-GV sample of events, the flux is symmetric with respect to, that is, the upward, the flux of neutrinos which come from above and the flux of neutrinos which come from below are the same. So there is a symmetry with respect to the cosine of the zeniting angle equal to zero. If you look at the zenith angle distribution, then the flux to the left, which corresponds to cos theta z smaller than zero, and which corresponds to neutrinos which come from below, is symmetric, coincides with the flux of for cos 2 theta z bigger than zero, which corresponds to neutrinos which come from the horizontal or from the above. So the flux is largely symmetric. Actually, for this sample of events, the up-down asymmetry in the predicted flux is zero with a correction, a very small correction. And from this comes the main evidence for oscillations of atmospheric neutrinos, the non-zero up-down asymmetry into the multi-GV new-like sample of events, which is shown here. I mean, this effect is well established, and now it is more than 9 sigma away from zero, and it is seen here on this plot. This is the difference between the number of events which contribute to the multi-GV sample and are due to neutrinos which come from above, and the number of events which contribute to this sample and are due to neutrinos which come from below. Above and below are determined by here, this diagram. Now, the thing to notice here also is that there is no big effect in the E-like multi-GV sample of events. So here, if there are some asymmetries of this kind, they cannot be very big. At least there are no evidences for non-zero asymmetry for the time being. Okay. Now, so let's discuss now a little bit the oscillations of atmospheric neutrinos in the case of three neutrino mixing. We will use the fact that delta M squared solar is much smaller than delta M squared atmospheric, and we will work in the approximation in which we will neglect the effects of the delta M squared solar on the oscillations of atmospheric neutrinos. This is a good approximation. This was checked in a number of numerical calculations. Now, in that case, we will be also interested in oscillations which are usually called subdominant for atmospheric neutrinos. That is, oscillations of nu mu into nu e, of nu e into nu e into nu tau, and so on. So the probabilities, the three neutrino oscillation probabilities in this approximation when delta M squared solar is neglected, is a known result, are reduced effectively to two neutrino oscillation probabilities. Now, P, nu e, nu mu, and nu mu, nu e are given by S23 squared, this is the sign of theta atmospheric squared, multiplied by some universal two neutrino oscillation probabilities. The nu e, nu tau is just the same thing with the sign replaced by cosine. The nu mu survival probability has a little bit more complicated structure. It depends on this universal two neutrino oscillation probability, which has a factor sine to the fourth power of theta atmospheric. And then there is kind of an interference term. Kappa is a phase, A to nu is a two neutrino oscillation amplitude. And these two are known. I mean, for this, one can have analytic expressions. I can show them to you later. Now,
for the transition probability, you are assuming that the CP phase is zero.
No, in this approximation, the CP phase disappears.
Why? You have theta 1 3 still there.
Right, but delta M squared solar is out.
I used it to zero.
Right. So the delta phase disappears. So you are in the regime of CP symmetry. Okay? Now, this universal two neutrino oscillation probability, as can be shown, actually is driven, these are oscillation driven by the delta M squared atmospheric and theta 1,3, the mixing angle, which is limited by the Shaw data. Of course, this probability depends on the energy and depends on the trajectory of the neutrinos, the nadir angle or the zenith angle, which characterizes the trajectory. Now, one can show that this is actually the two neutrino transition probability of electron neutrino into an almost equal mixture of nu mu and nu tau. But the main thing is that this is a two neutrino oscillation probability. Now, one can write similar expressions for the antineutrinos, for the oscillation probabilities of antineutrinos. This is known to practically everybody here. Now, if you go to fluxes, which are affected by these oscillations, the flux of electron and muon neutrinos, which give contribution to the, which determine the rates of the multi-GV E-like and mu-like events, taking into account the effects of the oscillation. So the nu flux is given by the initial nu flux times a correction. This correction depends on this two neutrino universal oscillation probability. However, there is a factor in front of it, which is sine square of theta atmospheric multiplying the ratio of the initial muon and electron neutrino fluxes. This is simple to show. Now, for the nu mu, you have a similar expression, somewhat more complicated because of this interference term present here. The main term, which multiplies the two neutrino, this universal two neutrino oscillation probability, has in front of it the inverse of this factor, 1 over S23 squared times R, minus 1. And then it's multiplied by S23 to the fourth power. So since S23 is of the order of 0.5, you see that this term, even if this transition probability is of the order of 1, this term cannot be bigger than about 1/4, maybe a little bit more. But this is kind of a suppression factor. You don't have such a suppression in the case of nu e. So now if you look at the factors which are involved for multi-GV, for sub-GV and multi-GV samples of events, and let us assume that neutrinos have trajectories in the mantle crossing a large part of the mantle. That means they go close to the core of the Earth. Then, for the sub-GV case, R is of the order of 2. This factor is close to 0. And you do not expect large effects of oscillations in the sub-GV sample of events in this approximation. For the multi-GV, as I told you, R is gross, can reach a value up to 4.5 in the interval of energies we are interested in. This factor is bigger. The minimal value is around 0.3. You can get to values of 1.25. Of course, it's a complicated story because you have to take into account the dependence of the fluxes on energy, the dependence of the cross sections on the energy. But it is obvious from this simple analysis that you can have much larger effect of the oscillations in the multi-GV sample than in the sub-GV sample. Now, if I summarize this part, then we see that, first of all, from those formulae it follows, those simple formulae it follows that the oscillation effects are larger for larger values of S23 squared. They are larger in the multi-GV samples of events than in the sub-GV sample. And in the case of multi-GV sample, they lead to the increase of the flux of electron neutrinos, effectively, which contributes to the event rate with respect to the flux which is predicted in the absence of oscillations. And similarly, they lead to the decrease of the multi-GV mu-like rate of events. So the quantity which can be, which in certain sense has a maximal sensitivity to these oscillation effects would be the ratio of mu to of mu-like to e-like multi-GV events. So let's look a little bit at this ratio. This will be the aim of the exercise at the end, to get predictions for the ratio of the rates of mu-like and e-like events in the multi-GV energy region. Now, the next step is calculation of the probabilities. This P2 nu, the universal probability which enters into the expressions.
So is your biggest systematic going to be the unknown initial nu mu to nu e ratio?
They claim that they know the ratio of the fluxes with 5% accuracy.
Based on theoretical calculations
right.
And Monte Carlo
right.
Simulation.
Right. And actually, if you look at the integrated ratio, let me see whether I have a value somewhere. Ah, yes. So for the multi-GV sample, you see that the errors are pretty small, really. But this is integrated over energies, zenith angles, and so on. I will be interested, as you will see later, in differential characteristics like zenith angle distribution of this ratio and the energy dependence of this ratio, basically the zenith angle distribution. Now, the calculation of these two neutrino oscillation probability, which answers all the formulae. Now, of course, this probability will be affected by Earth matter effects. And from this point of view, what matters is the density distribution in the Earth, which the neutrinos meet on their way to the detector. Now, I mean, as a rough approximation, neutrinos the Earth has two basic structures. From the point of view of the density distribution, we have a mantle and a core. Let me just remind you that neutrinos cross the mantle if the nadir angle is bigger than 33 degrees or the path length is bigger than about 1,660 kilometers. Bigger than 33 degrees and the path length is smaller than 1,660 kilometers. If the path length is bigger, they cross the core on their way to the detector.
So the number 33 degrees just comes from the relative size of what you take it to be the core and the mantle?
Right.
And people know that this kind of crude model of the Earth is okay?
It is pretty okay. I'll show you. So this is the density distribution in a model which is due to Stacy. But you get a similar, very close to a density distribution in a much more recent model, which is referred to as preliminary reference Earth model, PREM, which is from late 80s, early 90s. So you clearly see the mantle. Then what is shown here is the change of density as a function of the depth of the radius. Of the distance from the radius, excuse me. This is the surface, this is the center of the Earth. So this corresponds to mantle, and here the density changes between 3 and 5 grams per cubic centimeter. Then there is a sharp rise. I mean, the width of this region is very narrow. It's 100 kilometers or less, and this is known from seismic data, quite precisely.
Is there a theoretical reason for that?
Theoretical reason, I don't know. And then you have the core, where the density varies between 10 and 13 grams per cubic centimeter. However, we know from extensive numerical calculations that one can substitute this model of this, that is, the true Earth density distribution, for the calculation of the relevant neutrino oscillation probabilities with a simpler one, where you assume that the density in the mantle is constant and the density in the core is constant. By the way, this jump is by a factor of 2.5, roughly. Now, if you want to do really precise calculation of the probabilities within this approximation, for every trajectory of the neutrino crossing the mantle or the core, one has to choose for the constant density in the mantle the value of the average density along the neutrino trajectory, and similarly for the core. So in some sense, this average density is trajectory dependent. It runs with the trajectory, but not much. So that gives you even more precise values of the probabilities calculated in this simple model. So, as I said, according to this simple model, the Earth is something like that. So, neutrinos cross, if they cross the core, they cross a piece of mantle. They have a path length x prime in the mantle. Then they cross the core, where they have a path length x double prime, and then they cross again the mantle, and this part of the is just identical to this part of the trajectory. So for the neutrinos which cross the core, one has to calculate the probability for oscillations in this multi-layer, three-layer density distribution. For neutrinos which cross the mantle, the things are very simple. We just have to use neutrino oscillations in matter with constant density to calculate the relevant neutrino oscillation probability. So let's do that very briefly. Now, let me remind you that these two neutrino oscillation probability we are interested in is driven by delta M squared atmospheric and theta 1 3, which means that the corresponding vacuum oscillation probability is suppressed because sine squared 2 theta 1 3 is small. So the oscillations in vacuum are really suppressed because of the small value of the vacuum mixing, relevant vacuum mixing angle. Now, of course, they can be enhanced by matter effects. And I will show you directly the familiar expression for the probability of neutrino oscillations in matter, which is relevant here. I will be very brief here. So it has the form of the oscillation, the probability of oscillations in vacuum with the vacuum mixing angle replaced by the mixing angle in matter, and the oscillation length in vacuum replaced by the oscillation length in matter. This factor actually is the phase difference accumulated by the two eigenstates of the Hamiltonian of the neutrino system in matter on the path of the neutrinos in matter. So this is a phase. Now, I will not go through all this. I mean, it's very familiar to you. Just mention two things that are important. The resonance in the mixing takes place either for neutrinos or for antineutrinos, depending on the sign of delta M squared. Now, in our case, since sine squared 2 theta 1 3 is small, that means that cos 2 theta 1 3 is positive. That means that if delta M squared 3 1 is positive, you will have the resonance in the neutrino channel. If delta M squared 3 1 is negative, you will have the resonance in the antineutrino channel, but not in the neutrino channel. So the resonance is either in the neutrino or antineutrino channel, but not in both. And where it is depends on the sign of delta M squared 3 1. Further, if you want to have maximal transition probability 1, of course, two conditions have to be fulfilled. The mixing sine squared 2 theta in matter has to be 1. This is guaranteed by the resonance condition, the MSW resonance condition. But also, the phase that neutrinos have accumulated, the phase difference between the two neutrinos' eigenstates of the Hamiltonian, which is accumulated on the path of the neutrinos, has to be odd multiple of pi. Then the cosine that you saw up is equal to minus 1, and then the probability can be 1. So you have two conditions in order to have maximal transition probability.
Can I interrupt and ask?
Of course.
One of my former postdocs sent me an email a couple of weeks ago to tell me that our friend Smirnov has written a paper about looking for oil in neutrinos.
Forget it.
Forget a paper. I haven't had time to look.
Smirnov will not find oil with that paper.
I mean, it's not important in your model.
No. No, that you can read it. It's a very small effect. You need a very, very, very large detector for that. And these are effects at the level where 1,000 other effects appear. So the analysis is very complicated, really.
Did he get a lot of funding from
that? I doubt it.
Actually, the first people who had this idea was Swedish people. They wrote
the same.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, it's a very old idea.
And even before them, there was a Bulgarian physicist. No. It was an older gentleman who was fascinated with neutrino beams. He was not an expert. And he did something else. He was he knew geophysics very well. So he was trying to see under what conditions neutrino beams can be used in order to get information about the core of the Earth. So this, he studied this question, and he was talking about TV neutrinos, accelerators which float, and so on. So it was okay. So it's an old idea.
Okay, so all these papers are referenced in Smirnov, so I can look up these.
I don't know whether Smirnov's is published, but it's on the happy age.
Right.
Yeah. So now, we want maximal probability, one. I mean, this will give us maximal effect. So here are the conditions under which you can have this maximal probability when neutrinos cross only the mantle. There are these two conditions. If you take the parameters, I mean, delta m squared 3, 1, 3 times 10 to the minus 3 v squared, and you use the fact that sine squared 2 theta 1, 3 is smaller than 0.1, that is, the cosine is close to 1, then you find for the resonance energy a value of the order of 10 GeV. I mean, if delta m squared is somewhat smaller, you will find somewhat small value, but this is the range, I mean, 7, 10 GeV. The range for the resonance energy, the energy at which the resonance occurs in the mantle. Now, the second condition tells you that the path lengths should be large in the Earth. I mean, if sine squared theta 1, 3 is 0.05, you need about 8,000 kilometers to reach the point where the probability is 1. If it is smaller, then you need even larger distance, about 10,000 kilometers for 0.025. So one should look for effects for neutrinos which have large path lengths in the mantle, close to the core.
But I thought these path lengths, do they imply going through the core or not?
They not yet.
They're right on the edge.
No, yes. They are before entering the core. So if
you're heading for 10,600,
that's the maximum.
That's right. The maximum, right?
Right. Okay.
This is, you're talking about neutrinos, not antineutrinos.
This is antineutrinos is the same if delta m squared is negative. So you have the same situation for antineutrinos.
Yeah, but the antineutrino effect will be harder to see because
I'm coming to that. You're right. You're an expert, of course. By the way, I forgot to say something which I was thinking of saying and which one should remember. Yeah. I mean, the resonance condition, which gives you maximal mixing, n equal to any resonance, was first written in a paper by Sandeep and collaborators. And this is a paper from 1980. Vernon Barger is on it. Phillips, who is the other author?
Kerry
Wisnant. So, I mean, this resonance condition we are discussing was first actually
For constant
density, was first noticed by them. Okay, now, right.
The sine squared theta 1, 3 that you're considering are pretty large.
No, not yet. But we will come to the numerical examples.
Okay, but when they get larger, can you still neglect the solar delta M
squared? Okay, I will consider sine squared 2 theta 1, 3 not bigger than 0.1.
Okay, but here it's already bigger than 0.1.
No, this was 1 is 0.05. 0.05 is the upper 3 sigma limit on sine squared theta, 0.05.
It's about 0.2 in sine squared 2 theta.
Right, a little bit less. This is the 3 sigma limit. I will typically consider values which are 2 times smaller. Okay? So we hear the voice of Irina. Now there is a plot from Irina. So this very nicely illustrates the resonance. I mean, the effect of the resonance on the oscillation probability. This is nu equals to nu mu for a distance of about 7,000 kilometers. Here you see the parameters. Sine squared 2 theta 1, 3 is 0.1. 2 theta 2, 3 is 1. And I believe that delta m squared 3, 1 is 3 times 10 to the minus 3 EV.
It's E over delta.
It is E over delta m squared, right. But okay. Now, the solid line is for neutrinos, it's positive. The dashed line is the vacuum case, and this dotted line is anti-neutrinos. So you see clearly that when delta m squared is positive, matter effects suppress the oscillations of atmospheric neutrinos, of antineutrinos, excuse me. They enhance the oscillation probability for neutrinos, and remarkably, I mean, with respect to that for the vacuum case. And if you take now delta m squared, which is in the range of 3 times 10 to the minus 3 eV squared, you find that E is around 7 GeV or 10 GeV, something like that. Now, this is a comment along the lines of what Sandeep indicated. The multi-GeV sample, Super K cannot distinguish nu mu from anti-nu mu. And roughly two-thirds of the signal in their multi-GeV sample is due to neutrinos, and one-third is due to anti-neutrinos. Since cos 2 theta 1 3 is positive, because sine squared 2 theta 1 3 is small, in the case of delta m squared atmospheric positive, we will have big oscillation effects in these channels. Nu e goes into nu mu goes into nu e. And this will affect the two-third part of the sample. Now, if delta m squared is negative, the effects will be in the antineutrino channel, and then will affect just the one-third part of the sample. That indicates that there is a sensitivity to the sine of delta m squared. The effect is much bigger for when delta m squared atmospheric is positive than it is when delta m squared is negative. So there is a sensitivity to the type of the neutrino mass spectrum. Now the question is whether this can be measured, of course. Now, so far we have looked at the oscillations for neutrinos which cross the mantle. The next thing is to see what happens when neutrinos cross mantle, core, mantle. And here, there was kind of a surprise when we looked at that first. We're trying to understand what is going on here. Because, as you will say, I'll show you plots, there is again a resonance enhancement of the transition probabilities of interest. However, when you look at the position of the maximum, absolute maximum of the probability, for example, in energy, it doesn't correspond to the resonance energy, the MSW resonance, either in the mantle or in the core. So it's something different. So what happens here is that the maximal enhancement occurs due to a mechanism which is different from the MSW mechanism. Further studies have shown, in order to have this maximal enhancement of the transition probability, the oscillation length in the mantle and in the core have to obey certain constraints. I mean, there must be some kind of synchronization. And that's why I use the term neutrino oscillation resonance or something like that for this effect. So let me show you how this effect looks like. So this is nu e nu mu probability, transition probability, as a function of the nadir angle and e over delta m squared. For sine squared 2 theta, this is 1, 3 in our case, equal to 0.01, so small value. Now, this you can identify, it's not difficult, this as being due to the MSW effect in the mantle. This, I mean, there is a kind of similar structure on the right-hand side, which is hidden by this, which corresponds to MSW effect in the core, and this is the maximum due to the new effect. You see that the maximum occurs only in the core. The core neutrinos cross the core for nadir angle smaller than about 33 degrees, which is somewhere here. Now, this effect is another way of seeing it. It's in all probabilities. I mean, this is nu2, nu e. This is the probability which controls the Earth effect in the solar neutrino survival probability. So what is shown here is this probability for different trajectories through the Earth. This is center crossing, nadir angle 13 degrees, 23 degrees. This is the boundary between core and mantle. This is half of the mantle. And the mixing angle is, again, sine squared 2 theta, in our case, 1/3, 10 to the minus 2. And again, you can identify this shoulder being due to the MSW effect in the core. This structure here, this local maximum, due to the MSW effect in the mantle, and this is this new effect showing up. And you see that you get an enhancement due to this new effect, not by tremendous factors. It's not 100, it's not 10. But you get an enhancement by a factor of 3, 2, 3. Similarly, in nu mu, anti-nu mu, anti-nu s, I mean, here you don't even know where is the MSW. I mean, I don't know where which of these small things is the MSW effect. So this is just the new effect. Now, this new effect, I mean, we have looked into that. It shows, exhibits very strong dependence on the neutrino energy, of course. As you saw, it is sufficiently wide. Actually, for small values of the mixing angle, the width with respect to the max, the position of the maximum at the energy is about 0.3, 0.4, and it doesn't change really with the mixing angle. Now, we are interested in atmospheric neutrinos. Now, if one looks where this maximum occurs for the parameters we are interested in, delta m squared 3 3 times 10 to the minus 3 v squared, and sine squared 2 theta, which is 1/3 in our case, which is the range from 0.01 to 0.1 we will be interested in. So this maximum occurs at about 5 GeV. So this is in the multi-GeV sample of events.
Isn't it, I mean, you showed us that the electron neutrino coming from the atmosphere is consistent with the multi-color simulation, like
North. Right.
But here you are showing that you can have a big transition.
Probability one. But you remember there are factors in front of it. And you remember there was S23 squared times R minus 1, and so on. So effectively, at the end, the effect is not big. I mean, it's a subdominant effect for super K, for which they didn't look so far. So what the aim of this exercise is to make them looking also for subdominant effects. Now, if you're interested in this effect, it has been studied in a number of papers. I mean, you will, if I can give you references. Now, in order to understand it, one can use, of course, the two-layer model of the Earth. And then one can do everything analytically. Indeed, I mean, what you have, you know the density distribution here, you know the density distribution here, the density here and here. So what you have to consider is the oscillations of neutrinos in this first layer, the mantle, with a given mixing angle in matter, and a phase which is accumulated on the path of the neutrinos in the mantle, which is given by known expression. So the amplitudes are known for this. Then this is the next step is the oscillations with different mixing angle in matter and different phase accumulated on the path xw in the x double prime in the core. And finally, you have oscillations with the same parameters as in the first path of the neutrino trajectory. Now, you can do this analytically. So you can study the problem analytically. You can look for maxima, minima, whatever you're interested in, of the corresponding expressions. So what you find is that there are basically four solutions if you look, yes?
This may also be The effect of the other planets and the moon and so on completely negligible?
Very small.
Very, very small.
Yeah.
People have calculated that.
The moon, they have calculated.
What about the other planets?
I am not aware of anybody else calculating the other planets.
But it's negligible, right?
For the moon is negligible.
Okay. You know, these astrologers always talk about the planets being lined up.
Okay.
No. We're talking about 1% correction of their small.
Smaller.
And the moon is what, 1% or something?
Smaller.
Smaller.
So now, if you do this exercise, you find that there are four solutions for the conditions for the maxima of this oscillation probability, mental, co-mental. And correspondingly, there are four regions in the del times squared over E sine squared 2 theta plane where these solutions occur. The first region is the region C here. And this is the region where you can have MSW effect in the core. This region is characterized by the condition that cos 2 theta double prime, that is the mixed cosine of 2 theta, the angle, the mixing angle in the core, should be non-negative. On this line, you have both conditions which give you probability equal to 1 fulfilled. So on this line, the probability is 1, and this is due to the MSW effect in the core. However, you have two more solutions, which are new. One is the region D, as you see it here. Now, this region is characterized by the condition cos of the difference between twice the mixing angle in the core minus four times the mixing angle in the mantle should be smaller or equal to zero. Now, in this case, you can have maximal transition probability when the phases accumulated on the path of the neutrinos in the mantle and in the core are odd multiples of pi. On the line here, the probability is 1. Then you have this region A, which is the largest region of on the plane. Now, there, this region is characterized by two conditions. Cos 2 theta, the angle in the core, non-positive, so the inverse of this, while this cos of the difference between these two mixing angles has to be non-negative. So this is the inverse of this condition. And here is the region. And in that region, the phases can take values which are different of multiples of pi or 2 pi or pi over 2. However, they are constrained. They have values which must be correlated with the values of the mixing angles in the matter and in the core. And if these conditions are fulfilled, you have maximal transition probability in this region, solution A.
Is that your funny new resonance?
Right, right. Now the question is...
Sergey, we're considerably into the second hour.
We should stop. Okay. And you have to leave.
That's the because we met Galman
and there is Lodge.
I was afraid when I saw all those.
Yeah, that's a good stack.
Well, he hasn't made a dent into this.
But tell me, did I lose you or not yet? I think it was rather simple until now. So I will show you maybe one more slide for this probability. Just to complete this story, and then we'll show you two or three more slides for the result of all this calculation, the summary, so to speak. So now, this is the new nu mu in the case of interest for a specific trajectory along the diameter of the Earth. as a function of delta m squared over e and sine squared 2 theta. In our case, this is theta 1, 3. And we are interested in this small region here, I mean small mixing angles. And colors are values of the probability. I mean, the violet is a probability between 0 and 0.1. Dark blue is between 0.1 and 0.2, and so on. And the red spots you see here are values of the probability within 0.9 and 1. Now you may ask me, what corresponds to what? This is solution D. I mean, this is the new type of enhancement. The lower part, you remember, and this thing here. This is solution A. This is solution A. These are solutions which have nothing to do with MSW, I mean, for which the MSW resonance conditions in the mantle and the core are not fulfilled. You have MSW solutions. One is here. One is somewhere here, and there is another here. But the main solutions we are interested in, which actually are of interest for what I'm discussing, are not of the MSW type. So these are the islands where you have large probability, this P2 mu.
And so again, now I have a question. You have many red points, or even red islands. So when you see this effect, how do you know where you are?
I mean, you see that here, the mixing angle is small. In what sense where you are?
Well, I mean, these are regions where you're going to have a large effect.
Right.
So you see a large effect, but how do you know which one of those red points it corresponds to?
Now, we know that sine squared 2 theta 1, 3 is smaller than 0.2.
Okay.
So you must be somewhere here. So the only two, you have these two, and that's all. And actually, this one is the one that works, really.
Okay. And then can't you just look at the energy at which you
of course. Stick out? If you know delta m squared, you know theta 1, 3, you know where you are.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, this is all very beautiful. Real life. Real life is always tough, of course. Always. So one has to learn to enjoy the toughness of the real life.
Yeah, that's clear.
So now this is the result of the calculations taking all these effects into account. And let me first explain, of course, what is shown here. What is shown here is the ratio of the nu mu and nu e rate of events for the multi-GV samples, that is energy 2 to 10 GV, as a function of the cosine of the nadir angle. Now, when cosine is equal to 1, you cross the earth along the diameter. When you decrease the cosine, you move away from the core. Now, the ratio is calculated in several cases. Now, the solid line that you see everywhere, the upper line, corresponds to the case when you have two neutrino, nu mu, nu tau oscillations, and nu e doesn't oscillate. Theta 1, 3 is 0. Okay? Then you see a dash dotted line. This corresponds to three neutrino vacuum oscillations of nu mu and nu e. But you see that it's very close to the no oscillation situation. I mean, it differs a little bit, but not much really. You forget about that. This difference is very small. And then the other lines, the dashed line that you see here, here and here, here, here and here, corresponds to the ratio for three neutrino oscillations including the matter effects, for delta m squared 3-1 positive, so normal hierarchy. And the dotted line corresponds to the same observable for delta m squared negative, inverted hierarchy. And this is done for two values of sine squared theta 1, 3, 0.05 and 1, And three values of sine square theta 2, 3, 0.36, 0.5, and 0.64. And you see that when you move from here to here, the difference, I mean, what we are interested in is the difference between the solid and the dashed, and the solid and the dotted, and the dashed and the dotted lines. We see that when you move from up down, so you increase sine squared 2 theta 3, the effect increases. The difference between the solid line and the dashed line increases. And for the maximal value of 0.64, you have a difference which is of the order of 20-25%. And this might be, this is on the verge of possibilities of super-K, but they may see it with the accumulation of more data and so on. Now, if you move here from left to the right, again the effect increases. So it increases with sine squared 2 theta 1, 3 as well. And this is for obvious reasons. I mean, the probability becomes larger. So we are talking here about 20-25% effect in the region of cos 2 theta n bigger than about 0.4. So if you remember these super K distributions, the zenith angle, this would correspond to the 3-4 bins in a direction of starting from the core, moving out, of the super K distributions.
So Sergey, just depend on your remark that this is not MSW. If you were to redo this with just mantle density or just core density, you would get something very similar to the vacuum curves?
No. The vacuum curve is this one, the dashed dotted line. So all this difference is due to the matter effects.
Of having a mantle and a core, but if you had this constant density, you would...
Now, excuse me. The core corresponds to cos 2 theta n bigger than 0.8. So this structure that you see here is due to transitions for neutrinos which cross the core. And this is the effect I've been discussing in the last part. When you are here... Right.
So that's one density.
So there's not that much difference, is there, when you throw in a little between mantle and mantle plus core?
Well, there is this structure. The effect, I mean, you will see on some other plots the integral effect, how... No.
Did you put an experiment later part on this?
I was just going to say the same thing.
We didn't do that, I cannot tell you. For obvious reasons, it's, I mean...
But we know roughly from super K data what the E over mu ratio error bar is, roughly.
Okay, we can do that exercise with you this afternoon.
Okay.
Here is the super K data, here are the errors, we do it. There is some tendency in the right direction, I can tell you. But we didn't do it...
The right energy then.
Right. We didn't do the detailed analysis. Tom, if you, I mean,
I have to go.
Well, of course, sorry for being so slow. And so, now, the effect is very sensitive to the minimal value of the energy you take from this interval. Because as you increase this minimal value, you reduce the interval, you reduce the statistics. However, the weight of the part of the energy spectrum where you have large transition probability increases, and therefore the effect increases. So for 410 GeV, you get an effect which can reach even 30% here. It is for 0.1. Yeah. Okay. Now, then you may wonder how is the effect as a function of delta m squared atmospheric and sine squared 2 theta 1, 3. Well, you expect it to be larger for larger values of sine squared 2 theta 1, 3. And indeed, this is the case. I mean, you should compare. You should look at this difference of the solid black line and the dashed line, and also the dotted line. So as sine squared 2 theta 1, 3 increases, the effect increases. But in what regards delta m square 3-1, luckily we're in the right region. I mean, the maximum of the difference is between 2 and 3. So this is kind of favorable for looking for this effect. And I think I'll stop here. So for some reason or another, you will not find plots of super K which give you this ratio as a function of the zenith angle. So what we are urging them to do now is to produce such plots and to compare what they get with the predictions of the vacuum, in the case of vacuum oscillations and including also matter effects. Now, if the parameters are right, I mean, one has to be lucky indeed, perhaps they can see indications for these effects taking place. And of course, this will be of fundamental importance. So thank you for your patience, really.